Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November 30th. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets show today. Joining us in the studio is Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. Get in now and get in line. Call 800-348-2551 to join the conversation today. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Chris Dallas, it's Pets and Vets today. It comes up after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's our Pets and Vets program for the month this afternoon, and here to take your calls is Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. Dr. Dallas specializes in treatment of chronic health issues in pets, frequently using a holistic approach. She earned a doctorate in veterinary medicine from Ohio State University and specializes in veterinary acupuncture, end-of-life care for animals, and nutritional counseling. Dr. Dallas, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. It's kind of a yucky day, but a good day for a Pets and Vets show.
It is. It's a good day to chit-chat about our beloved furry ones.
And the lines are already loading up. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. It's voxpop@wamc.org. Now, remember, we can't ask follow-up questions if you email. So provide as much information as you can. You know, not 10 pages worth, but enough so that Dr. Dallas can answer your question. So you want to chit-chat for a while? You want to get right to the phones?
Why don't we get to the phones? Because it looks like there's a lot of people already.
Right, you're ruthlessly efficient. Well done. All right, let's go to Shannon in Seward, New York. Shannon, you're first.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about skincare. Me and my dog semi-recently relocated up to New York from South Carolina, but she's always seemed to have dry skin. She doesn't have sores or complete redness. But she's always a little itchy, no matter whether I wash her extra or less. She loves to get dirty, but she does not like to take baths that much. And more than the itching, I'm a little concerned that she does a lot of licking, which can lead to more problems. So I was just wondering what would be one of the best things to do for her, whether maybe put something special in her diet or a specific type of wash.
Well, I wouldn't think about it as something that you need to do from the outside of her body. This is an inside-out problem. So if you want an easy and possibly quick fix, you could just try adding some omega-3 fatty acid, which is like a fish oil. We find that fish oils are the best for dogs and most efficiently used. And my favorite brand, I'm going to shout it out there, is Nordic Naturals. That you have to really, it is a buyer beware situation with animal supplements and actually human supplements as well. Mm-hmm. You often don't know what you're getting.
Right.
You could be buying soybean oil and not know. So you could start with that. And then if that doesn't clear things up, you may want to just, how old is she, by the way?
She's 2.5.
Okay. I mean, you know, you do want to just double check and make sure her thyroid levels are okay. And then if the fish oil doesn't really give her a nice glossy coat, then you want to take a very close look at her diet and be feeding her as much fresh food as you can, not just dog food.
Yes. I have a sister that's actually a groomer at PetSmart's grooming salon, and she tells me to use the antimicrobial and antifungal shampoos and things, but I get very wary about using things with extra chemicals and things like that. So
yeah, well, you know, I've had my dog now for about 5 years, and he has never had a bath, and he does not smell, and he's not, you know, I mean, if he gets muddy, I might rinse him off with some water, but dogs don't generally need a bath if they are healthy. They should
That's
have a.
That's what my grandmother tells me.
Yeah, your grandmother is right.
All righty.
Thank you very much for the call.
And thank you.
Thank you, Shannon.
Now, it's not a clue that they moved from South Carolina and then moved here and the issue started?
That's a really good point and good question. I suppose it's possible that there's an environmental allergy, but when she said it was her coat was dry and kind of flaky, you know, that just sounds like, I don't know, the move might be like a red herring. Like, it's not something that I really am focused on.
Makes sense. Yeah. Dr. Chris Dallas is our guest. It's Pets and Vets today. 800-348-2551. Tony in Lee, Mass. Tony, you're on.
Hi, thank you. We have a male adult cat of indeterminate age. We got him when he was already an adult. And recently, maybe 6 months ago, he started losing fur on his abdomen, sort of starting closer to his back legs and then progressing forward. Mm-hmm. We switched food, and it seemed to improve, and some of his fur started to come back. And then by mistake, someone bought the food that we were feeding him prior, and it seems like it's gotten worse. So mm-hmm. he still has some bare patches, but is it possible that it's the food that's causing the problem?
Yes, it's not only possible, it's highly likely. Huh. It's always about the food. I feel like this is what we talk about in this show a lot, is it's all about the food. And so first of all, are you feeding dry food or canned food to your cat?
We had fed him only dry food for the first year or two that we had him. More recently, he also seemed to be losing weight, so we started supplementing with canned food as well.
Okay. So dry food is really making its way out of the, you know, how we look at feeding cats. The dry food does nothing to help with their dental health, and we know now that the dry food has too many carbohydrates for cats and can cause a lot of different health issues. You're experiencing one of them. There are others that can be much more serious and life-threatening. So we generally recommend a completely canned food diet for cats, and what I usually like to tell people is don't get loyal to any one brand of food or any flavoring of food. I know with cats that can be tricky because sometimes, I know, sometimes cats are finicky and you open a can and they don't want it.
Yeah.
Hopefully you have another cat in the house who eats everything like I do. No, okay. So yeah, sometimes you do have to, I mean, that's a reality. Sometimes you do have to feed the same flavor of the same brand. But you do want to stick with canned food. And if you do have a cat who appreciates variety, you know, I would definitely buy a variety of foods, but you're definitely on the right track with what, you know.
Is that an allergy Tony is alluding to here?
You know, it's hard to say. It could be an allergy. It could also be abdominal pain from just indigestion, and they overgroom in response to pain. You know, I wonder, too, sometimes about if their lower urinary tract is healthy when they're on dry food, because that can be a problem. They can develop crystals, which causes pain and discomfort. Yep. So, but it does seem to be something that, for most cats, a diet change takes care of it. If not, you have to go through more, you know, intense diagnostics. So,
well, good luck, Tony. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as getting a cat,
I know it's true. It's hard.
I ranted one day. The vet didn't show up here for about 15 minutes, and I was monologuing. And I ranted about how our cat, who used to eat everything, has now trained me to get the most expensive wet food in the store.
Yeah,
it's all she eats.
Yeah. Well, she knows you get what you pay for, maybe.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm total pushover. Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous.
But you know what you're paying for in food, maybe you won't be paying for in vet bills. That's the way to
possibly
look at it.
Yeah. Possibly. All right. Let's go to Mark in Salem, New York. Mark, you're on.
Hi. Well, almost I have a long history with many, 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 many cats, more than 100 over a period of 65 years.
Wow.
And most of my cats are cats that are strays or ones that have been dumped. A couple of 5 years ago, we had two beautiful yellow cats that were dumped in the Hannaford parking lot, and that's a whole story. But not too long ago, I found a kitten in my barn, and no mother cat, no other kittens, just him. And he's a tuxedo black, if that makes
sense. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and he is very much a tuxedo black in terms of temperament and everything else. He's very aggressive. Mm. When I got him, he still had the blue-green turquoise eyes, and I took him to the vet. He weighed a pound and a half, and she said he was about 3 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
And he is now approaching 5 months, and he weighs like 6.5 pounds. And he's had his first series of shots, which made him very ill, fever and lethargic and sore. And now he's due for a second set of shots and also to be neutered. And I've been told by friends and other people to wait till he's 6 months old to have him neutered. Mm. And other people say, well, 5 months is enough. I wonder what your opinion is on that. He's not spraying or anything. There's two other adult cats in the house that are over 10 years old.
Yeah.
And he just pastures them.
Yeah. In my mind, I don't really see a big difference between 5 months and 6 months. So you're saying he's 5 months old now, and you're wondering?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's hard to gauge for sure, but it's roughly 5 months.
Yeah, and you'd rather get him neutered now to just...
No, I'd rather wait a little bit.
Oh, you'd rather wait. I think that's absolutely fine. If you don't have a compelling reason to do it now, you can absolutely wait. I wouldn't expect him to start spraying for a while. You know,
I was thinking that the neutering process changes their hormonal level, and he may not grow to his full size, or he may get fat.
Yeah, it's interesting you say this, because there's a lot of debate right now happening in the veterinary field. People are looking at whether we should be neutering animals at a young age or postponing until they reach sexual maturity. And it's going to be a while before the jury's out on that one. There's just a lot of mostly debate happening. But I think you're fine waiting. I don't see any reason. I know when I was practicing conventional medicine and doing surgeries, I would often wait till 6 or 7 months of age. So.
All right. Well, Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Our guest today is Chris Dallas. It's Pets and Vets on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire. Now selling seasoned firewood, tumbled, screened, and fire-free of debris, cut, split, and delivered, super sacks of one-third of a cordwood now available, whitneysfarm.com. Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power for home, business, or farm. Keep solar local, northeast-solar.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. albany.clipcentric.com. And Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans. Hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons, grapesandgrainswine.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Pets and Vets today. Dr. Chris Dallas is with us. And, Mark, our last caller, mentioned that a cat was feverish, and it just occurred to me, what is the normal body temperature for a cat?
Cats are, they're up there. They're probably 101 to 102.5 or so. Yeah.
And are there kitty thermometers? How would you tell if a cat has a... I don't want to know.
Yeah.
No, forget it.
Yeah.
I withdraw the question. A couple of emails before we get back to the phones. This one is from Chris in Cornwall and Hudson. My 15-year-old female cat has been successfully treated for hypothyroidism for 2 years. She's now showing very early signs of chronic renal failure. She's a picky eater, but has adjusted fairly well to the prescription renal diet. However, the manufacturer states that the food should be fed intermittently. Do you know of any research that shows a restricted protein diet is harmful to cats? And that's from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson.
Whether restricted protein is harmful to cats?
Yeah.
Well, again, there's a lot of debate about this one. And coming from a holistic perspective, I am with Holistic Vets in that we do not restrict protein in cats who are in early renal failure. We wait until their phosphorus levels are up. And the issue with protein is it's very rich in phosphorus. And meat is rich in phosphorus, I should say. And when the kidneys go into an advanced state of renal failure, they can't handle that level of phosphorus. There is quite a bit of evidence showing that restricting protein early on may extend survival time through the condition. However, my issue with that is they really were just looking at variables that didn't involve other health outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, longevity. And, there are a lot of issues associated, I think, with a low protein diet. So, I think you can go either way on this. I think it's most important that your cat eats, and what you feed right now is probably less important. It will become more important later on.
In 15 years, at some point, fairly in the next few years, it'll be.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Anyway. I mean, you never know. You never know that this is an interesting combination. Hyperthyroidism and renal failure can actually go well together.
Ah.
Yeah, because a hyperthyroid cat is very hungry, and a renal failure cat tends to have a low appetite. So I often stop treating the hyperthyroidism in these cases and just maintain normal blood pressure and let the hyperthyroidism treat the renal failure.
That's amazing.
If you can wrap your brain around that. Yeah,
yeah, that's
really
cool.
It's interesting, yeah.
All right, this one came in from Carol. I have two domestic short hair cats. 6-year-old female is tiny, just 6 pounds, just right. We adopted a 1-year-old female 4 months ago. She's about 12 pounds and seems a bit chubby, but not by much, maybe a pound. Vet thought she was okay, but she seems to have gained weight since we took her to the vet when she was first adopted. She is round and not easy to feel her ribs. Both are indoor cats and need a mixture of high protein, no grain, dry, with some canned food every other day. They don't seem to care for cooked chicken or egg. Very difficult to feed them in different areas. Busy home with working parents and kids at school. I'd like the trim tiny cat to eat whenever she wants. I've always had two cats which were trim until now. Help! And that's from Carol.
Hi, Carol. So that's a tough one. One thing that a veterinary technician invented was a box where you cut out the hole in a box and you leave the food inside, and the hole has to be just the right size so the skinny cat can get in there and feed and the heavier cat cannot.
Okay.
So there's one.
Until the fat cat thins down.
Yes, right, exactly.
Brilliant.
But I would also advocate not giving the chubby cat any dry food, because that would be,
again,
contributing. Yeah, exactly.
All right, back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Katrina in Troy is next. Hi, Katrina.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am an independent foster, and I had a kitten who I unfortunately had to put down due to FIP. And I was wondering how long I should wait before I have any cat friends over, because I know that the virus, the coronavirus, can live outside of its host for quite some time, as far as I read. So I was wondering if you had any input on that.
Well, that's interesting, because the coronavirus is something that they really could attract from their mother when they're born. And
okay.
What's interesting about FIP is coronavirus is ubiquitous in cats. Every cat ends up with a coronavirus.
Right.
But in certain cats,
he was FIV positive. So
he was also.
So he developed the FIP.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So FIP, you know, and that's an interesting point that you're bringing up, is that he's got, you know, viral co-infections. But I would not be, you know, too concerned. Did he defecate all over the house? And, like, were you having trouble?
No. I just was worried that, you know, I had read, I think from, like, Cornell or something, that FIP, after the cat who is infected, you know, leaves a space, that the coronavirus can stay and then, you know, maybe mutate into.
Right.
But then, so it would be only in a, well, it would be more likely to mutate into FIP in a cat that has a deficiency.
I'm not sure we really know, because, you know, I've unfortunately lost a lot of patients to FIP who did not have co-infections. And it just seems to be, we think there could be a genetic component to this that just makes the cat more vulnerable to, you know, that mutated form. There's still, unfortunately, a lot we don't know about it. It's still one of those medical mysteries. So I would just, you know, clean your house with, you know, a good antiseptic. And I think it's fair to go ahead and continue fostering.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks,
good
Katrina.
Luck, Katrina.
800-348-2551. Pets and Vets today with Dr. Chris Dallas and Bob in Albany. Bob, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Chris. Thank you, Ray.
Hi.
I have a 12-year-old Westie who was diagnosed earlier this year with pulmonary phlebitis.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm told is going to kill him over a period of around 18 months, at least that's the average.
Mm-hmm.
He's being treated with steroids, primarily to ease his situation, mm-hmm. and I don't know if that even starts to retard the problem, but I'm wondering if there's anything in the holistic side of veterinary medicine that might offer a hope of a cure or a longer lifespan.
That's interesting. I just have a new patient right now who was diagnosed with this exact same thing, and he's a Westie as well. I am going to be putting my patient on some Chinese herbs and they are, it's not necessarily like a specific formula for this problem. You base a Chinese herbal formula on a patient's pattern. So you look at everything else the patient has going on with their body, other, you know, various imbalances, and then you prescribe based on that. So, you know, two Westies with the same disease don't necessarily get the same herbal remedy. And that's sort of the, you know, intricacies and nuances of Chinese medicine. I'm also considering doing some systemic enzymes, and those are fairly new to me. I don't know a lot about them. I've learned about them actually from my clients. And, you know, I have some pretty amazing clients who do a lot of research, and some of them have reported really neat success with systemic enzymes.
Now, what is that?
Well, enzymes are you know, active proteins right. in our body. And these are allegedly enzymes that make it through the GI system into the body and can reduce inflammation. I don't even know. This is so new to me as well, and I'm still learning about them, so I have not actually started using them yet. But it occurred to me with my own Westie patient that that might be a way that we want to consider going. Hmm. So it's for scavenging inflammation, and apparently they have some antioxidant effects as well. But I think Chinese herbs would be the way to go, and actually acupuncture would be amazing, because if you've got an acupuncturist near you, that would really help maintain function in light of the disease, you know, in spite of there being a disease process happening.
Explain to me the philosophy behind that. In other words, explain how in those who practice acupuncture, mm-hmm. you could work on pulmonary illness mm-hmm. via poking the outside
poking
of an
the
animal.
Needles, yeah.
yeah.
Well, what acupuncture is doing is it is maintaining or restoring function when it's been lost. So you can't do much to change the physical structure of a disease process. Like, you know, let's say a tumor. A tumor is a little easier to understand because we can all imagine how a tumor interferes with function.
Yeah.
So you can't really do anything to shrink the tumor. You might be able to stabilize its growth mostly through a better diet and, you know, maybe some immune support. But what the acupuncture does is it allows the body to function in spite of there being a structural disease.
Interesting.
So I've had, for example, a cat with a small kidney bean-sized mass on her jejunum, which is her small intestine. Yeah. And she couldn't keep food down. She was 16 years old. She was vomiting. The owners just wanted a couple of weeks with her. And I treated her pretty aggressively, and she actually lived 2.5 years.
Huh.
She stopped vomiting after the first treatment. So it's, and yet when she passed away, the tumor was the size of, I would say, a baseball.
Wow.
And she never was symptomatic again. So you can take away, in some conditions, you can take away the functional issues that you're having despite the disease process happening and going on and progressing.
Bob, thank you for the call. That is so fascinating.
Yeah.
Because you can't really get a placebo effect
right.
in an animal.
I know. She's either vomiting or she's not vomiting.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Let's go to Mike in Cornwall. Mike.
Yes. Thank you very much for the call, taking it. Question. We took a group of cats back in 99, a litter of 7, thinking we're adopting one. My wife said, can we take them all? We did that. So we've got 5 from the original 7.
Okay.
Then she adopted 2 females, 1 pregnant from Water of Elite, another sister outsider with her now. Okay. And they're all doing well. The sister was pregnant. She had 3 here in the house.
Okay.
Now, the dominant male in that original litter
mm-hmm.
of the 7, he's a snowshoe. Big thing is now, and I got to try to arrest this, whatever I can, but the guy's going on to be 18 years old. Spraying. Just, you know, doing his thing. I'm going to do this.
Okay.
I'm going to.
We got you.
Go against the wall,
yeah.
And nobody's going to. And then my wife goes crazy because
yeah,
she
yeah,
got
okay. We understand.
New furniture and this and that and the
right.
other thing. Can you give me. And Catatract does nothing for him.
All right.
That's like
yeah.
the zero.
So,
he doesn't give a damn.
Okay, all right.
Excuse
fine.
My language.
Well,
he doesn't care what he does.
Okay, so he's urinating on vertical surfaces or horizontal?
Vertical surfaces, yes, but yes.
Okay. And has he been checked for like a year? I mean, I know this definitely sounds behavioral.
See, my wife gives them, they all have kidney disease.
Okay.
She gives them subcutaneous lactate bringers every day. She gives epichitin. She gives acidil. She gives metathiazole every single day.
Okay.
So
he hasn't missed one on them.
Right, you may want to break his habit of spraying by, for now, what I often do with cats like this is I will put them in confinement.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I put them in confinement. So he'd have his own litter box for a little while in a small space that he's not sprayed before,
even
a bathroom or something like that, because sometimes you just have to retrain them. I mean, this is something that really requires a very whole approach that is probably
right,
beyond.
He will go out. I mean, he'll go out with the others, and he won't be a problem.
But
he has this. You know, he's that oldest dominant male. He's a snowshoe.
All right.
And he gives this low throat meow.
Yeah.
Trying to call one of the other females or one of the later females that came into the pack.
Yeah.
And have you seen that happen?
Yeah. I mean, well, cats do, they're cats. And
cats
they,
are cats.
You never
yeah,
know.
They've all been neutered and spayed.
Okay.
But he will...
Mike, we're going to have to move it along here, but maybe you can give just a fast bit of advice here.
Yeah, I guess I would go back to, you know, keeping him confined for, 3 to 4 weeks even in a bathroom.
Yeah.
See if you can retrain him on the box, just break the cycle of his stress, because this sounds like a stress-related problem here.
Yeah, so. A lot of cats in that house, too.
Yeah, and for sometimes that can work fine. Some people end up with a harmonious household with 10 or 15 cats, and sometimes it just takes one to, really ruin it for everybody.
I had always heard that when there are issues such as this, now that cat's 18 years old, who knows what's going on?
Right.
Senility, perhaps?
Right, right.
But you're supposed to have one more litter box than cats. If you have 12 cats...
That's 13 litter boxes.
How are you going to do that?
I know. That's a hard one.
Caramba. Let's
multi-cat
go.
Households are tough.
Kim in Lee, Massachusetts. Hi, Kim. You're on with Chris Dallas.
Hey. I'm calling about my 2-year-old female dog that we got probably a year and a half ago on a rescue. She has huge anxiety issues over other people that come into the house or other people that we meet when we're walking.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that she actually will go to is my daughter, because she has a dog that she brings along with her all the time, and they seem to be good friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you had any suggestions for her, me actually, to get her to warm up to people that come into the home.
Yeah.
Or
well, I'll
anything.
Tell you, my answer to you now is going to be different than it might have been a year ago.
Why?
Because I've been doing more research about behavior, and I've had a lot of behavior cases come to me for holistic approach. And with some of them, acupuncture and herbs have helped, and I always try to go the natural route first.
Right.
But after 2 to 3 months of trying that, if I don't have a good response, I have really changed my tune about psychotropic drugs. And I have gone to several lectures at veterinary meetings, and many times these issues are truly from a chemical imbalance, and they can be fixed, and she could have a good prognosis. And, it's a hit or miss with some of the drugs that we choose. I do think that it's important to work with a trainer at the same time. If you were to initiate drug therapy for her, I think it's really important to have a professional trainer who can help you manage any cues that you might be inadvertently giving her, or, checking in to make sure that on the behavior side of things, there doesn't need to be any modification. But I am much quicker to go to the pill bottle now. Oh. And I can't believe I'm saying that, but that's.
Are you ashamed of yourself?
I've learned my lesson. And I've always kind of prided myself on knowing where holistic medicine ends and Western medicine begins.
Right.
And I had a blind eye with behavior.
Very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Kim, thank you very much for that call. Quickly, before our next break, let's see if we can get Martha in here. Martha in Goshen, Massachusetts. Martha, you're on.
Hi, thanks. So I have a snoodle and a lab mix, and both of them, when I am scratching their back, it seems like they have like a trigger point right around kind of their hips, close to their spine.
Mm-hmm.
And I know with humans, you can kind of put sometimes like a steroid injection to kind of relax that trigger point. I mean, I know you do acupuncture, but is there anything like that in veterinary medicine that would, I try to massage it out and they'll let me do it to a point and then they kind of, you know, do a little snip at me that, you know, I'm not liking that right now.
What is a trigger point, Doc?
Well, I'm guessing, are you talking about it's a painful spot or are they, when
you're... Yeah, kind of like a knot, you know, a muscle that's just kind of seized up that just really can't be stretched out too much and just really needs maybe some local anesthetic or a steroid to just kind of relax out. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, to answer your question, yes, that type of thing does exist in veterinary medicine, and we do have pain specialists in the area who can give steroid injections and what have you. But I think, you know, you may want to consider even consulting with a veterinary chiropractor, because if something is out of alignment, you know, you can inject it all day long and you're not necessarily going to solve the problem. So, I think a good chiropractic assessment would probably be the best place to start, because, you know, to do those injections, they generally have to be under anesthesia. So it's not a small deal to do that.
I see. Okay. Yeah. They're not compliant like a human would just lay there.
Yeah.
If you got a second, just a real quickie. When I just loaded them in the car before I called you guys, my nut mix that I kind of enjoy, he got into, and it had a few raisins in it. My worries that he ingested, I don't even know how many. It wasn't probably maybe like 3 or 4, worst case scenario.
Yeah, okay. No, you should be fine. I mean, you know, the issues we have with raisins are more idiosyncratic, meaning it doesn't, you know, hurt everybody, but also volume-wise, I think you're
dogs can't eat raisins.
Grapes have been known to cause some issues with renal problems, but that's more of an idiosyncratic reaction than a known toxicity.
Let's take a break here. Dr. Chris Dallas is our guest. We'll hit the home stretch in a moment. It's Vox Pop, it's Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting the Capital Region's National Natural Landmark with an interactive visitor center, guided programs, and 20 miles of trails, albanypinebush.org. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores, Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts, a home-style bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires, bedandbowl.com. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts, locally sourced comfort food, beers, wines, and spirits, live music weekends, now reserving for holiday events and New Year's, chestercommontable.com. And Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Pets and Vets, Ray Graff here, joined by Dr. Chris Dallas today. And, oh, boy, the lines are loaded, Doc, and a pile of email that
we need another hour.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I apologize if your question does not get answered. There's only so much time on this program. Let's whip through about 3 or 4 email and then get back into the phones. This one's from Ann. I have questions about the Lyme vaccine. 1, how effective is it? 2, how does a vaccine work on a bacteria? And 3, does the vaccine work for both dogs and cats? My vet is fully engaged with Lyme testing for my dog, but it's not mentioned at all during my outdoor cats visits. That's from Ann.
Great questions. Yeah. Okay, 1, the Lyme vaccine is 60% effective, and that is a very, your second question answers the first question. We don't get good immune coverage with bacterial diseases as we do with viral diseases.
Okay.
So that's true with lepto. In general, I don't recommend the Lyme vaccine because we have a lot more tick-borne illnesses in this area than I think we're aware of, including Anaplasma, Babesia, Ehrlichia, Bartonella. We've got lots of them. So because the vaccine is only 60% effective, 95% of dogs are naturally immune to Lyme disease, will not get sick from it. Those numbers don't add up for me. And cats, seem to be naturally immune to Lyme disease. We don't see it in cats.
This one is from Paul in North Adams. I recently adopted two cats. One of them, not sure if the male or female, drags objects into one of the two litter boxes. Why? That's weird. That's from Paul.
You want to take a stab at that, right?
The cat is obviously a mental case of some kind.
I couldn't tell you.
No?
No. I think my cat one of my cats used to drag a blanket into the...
Just for fun,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So then it's not a cry for help. It's just I'm a cat and I'm really weird.
Yeah, I'm guessing so.
Fair enough. Well, let's go to Dara's email. My daughter has a cat that is prone to struvite crystals and almost died as a result of a blockage. Mm-hmm. He has been put on a special dry food diet, but we'd like to find an alternative to the dry food. Do you have any recommendations?
Canned food. Okay. Always canned food. Dry food is what causes the struvite crystals. It causes the urine to become too alkaline, and those struvites settle out of solution and become solids. And the only way to keep your cat's urinary tract healthy is on an exclusively canned food diet.
All right, and we'll do our final email here and then back to the phones. This is from Anne in Rhinebeck. We have a 3-year-old lab who has been on a raw food diet since birth. As you know, opinions are very mixed on the raw diet, and we'd like to know your thoughts on its pros and cons.
Well, I do advocate for a raw diet. I feed my own dog a raw diet. It needs to be done right. You can't just go to the grocery store and get some meat and vegetables. There needs to be a lot of calcium in the diet, so in the form of raw meaty bones, like chicken necks and what have you. So I do consider it the most species-appropriate way to feed a dog, and I know that most of my colleagues are probably cringing as they...
Some are against it, yeah.
Yeah, some are against it. Some feed their dogs raw and don't tell their clients that because they're not comfortable with it. Well, there's a lot of rhetoric around it and a lot of concerns about contamination in the household, if you have young children playing in the dog bowl, that kind of thing.
So the trick is to be careful and do your research.
A lot of research, yeah, or talk to a veterinarian who can guide you.
All right, let's go back to the phones and... Kyle in Rensselaer. Kyle, are you there?
Hi, yes.
You're on.
You hear me?
Yep.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, I have a 4-year-old Himalayan who recently has developed some scabbing around the under the chin, around the under the ears, and around the hindquarters. And I'm not sure why. I know it's not fleas because we've run the comb through and it's come up clean.
Okay. Well, I mean, that could be a number of things. You said the base of the tail also?
Yeah, base of the tail.
Yeah, I mean, no. You know, the only thing you can do before you go in and take him in for... It's a him? I'm sorry. You said a he?
It's a her.
A her, I'm sorry. The only thing you can do on your own, I think, to test this out, it would, you know, on your own before you go in for diagnostics, would be to change her diet and just to see if there's some sort of reaction. But I wouldn't let it go too long if it looks like it's still kind of marching in the wrong direction.
How long?
Like over the next month. If you change her diet and you got her on a good quality canned food diet only, no dry food, and if it's getting worse or spreading to other areas, I would take her into your vet for a workup.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I have her on a... grain-free chicken dry food along with some canned food mixed in there. Unfortunately, I can't do the canned food all day long because obviously at work, so I leave some dry out for her. But if I mix the wet in or the canned food in with that, what she does is she pours that down and then just throws it up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, cats don't really need food out all the time. I mean, you can just get her trained to start eating twice a day. I can't leave food out of my
good
house.
Good luck with that, though. I mean, the cats, they'll go nuts.
See, that's funny. I have never, ever left food out for my cats.
Really?
One of my cats would weigh 40 pounds if I did that. Yeah, so.
Well, I think that's the way our cat's headed.
Yeah.
And it's a problem.
Yeah.
Meat. Is what we primarily do, but there's always a little dry there for the kids.
Yeah, you don't need the dry.
Okay.
Let that go. Just feed them twice a day.
I'll tell the cat that you said so.
Yeah.
Let's go to Fred in Greenfield Park, New York. Fred, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Ray and Dr. Chris.
Hi there.
I have a 9-year-old Italian greyhound, generally in good health, except he's developing cataracts. I was just curious what the treatment may be and the rough price range, and also since you do holistic healing, I don't know if you're aware of Swedish bitters. I hear that putting the Swedish bitters on your eyelids in a human being is supposed to cure cataracts. Do you think that that would be appropriate for a dog?
Wow, I am not familiar with that. I'd have to do a little research on it. This is what I love about holistic medicine. Everybody knows.
Neither, and he's 9 years old.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, cataracts are a tough one if they're truly cataracts and not just general aging changes, because dogs do develop a haziness in their lenses as they age. It's called lenticular sclerosis. Everybody gets it, and when the onset is extremely variable, and they can see through the fogginess in that lens. They do not lose their eyesight. Cataracts do cause actual blindness, and they are much, much brighter. They typically come on pretty quickly, and the only treatment for that, unfortunately, is surgery. Mm. I know Cornell does it. So, you know, if you're just seeing normal age-related changes, then I'm guessing that your dog's not going to lose his eyesight.
All right. Thank you, Fred. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Dr. Chris Dallas is our guest on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. Dory in Pittsfield. Dory, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm calling about reoccurring Lyme disease. My mother has a 2-year-old Yorkie mix, about 9 pounds. About 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, he was diagnosed with Lyme disease, mm-hmm. Only because he was showing the symptoms of it. The blood test came back very low. The vet said she wouldn't have even treated for it, but because of the stiffness and the lameness that he was showing, mm-hmm. she treated with the doxycycline.
Okay.
So we did that for 30 days, and after the first 3-4 days, he was fine.
Okay.
But we continued it for the whole 30-day treatment.
Mm-hmm.
About 6 months later, he showed signs of Lyme disease again, the mm-hmm. same thing, the
yeah.
stiffness. All of a sudden, it seems to happen. And it happened to be on a Sunday, and we couldn't get into the vets until the following day.
Mm-hmm.
The following day, he was fine, completely
yeah.
fine, and he was fine for 6 months after that.
Yeah.
And then, again, he showed signs again of the stiffness and the lameness, and we brought him in, and the vet put him on the doxycycline again for another 30-day
yeah.
treatment.
Yeah.
And after like 3-4 days, he was fine. I'm just wondering if the doxycycline is not good to continually give him every time he shows signs of that,
yeah.
if we should just wait it out, or if it will go away permanently at some point.
It's a tough call, and there's a lot we don't know about these diseases, Dory. We're in a pickle with these tick-borne diseases. I have a dog with chronic Ehrlichia, and I have the same thing going on, and I do put him on Chinese herbs to try to keep it at bay. I use the doxycycline as little as I can, but there have been times where his lameness has gotten pretty severe. So I guess my answer to you would be, you know, use it when you really need to. You could try to wait it out one time and sort of see if he gets better on his own. I would, in the meantime, try to prevent these recurrences through making sure he's on a really, really good diet, preferably home-cooked or raw. But if you've got to do prepared foods, I would stick with like a canned food. And you might also consider adding some omega-3s to his diet as well, again, just for the anti-inflammatory factors. You know, I can't really recommend any specific immune support that isn't prescription-based. So, but, you know, maybe consulting with a holistic vet in your area, you know, might be helpful as well, just to try to prevent those recurrences.
Why would a good diet help suppress Lyme?
Well, you know, so we don't know a lot about Lyme and how it's working.
Mm-hmm.
I know actually a lot more about it from my friends and colleagues who've had chronic Lyme themselves.
Yeah.
And when they have been treated by integrative doctors, they are told they cannot eat gluten, dairy, or sugar. And if they do, they will never get well. And I've seen it happen where they have quit those 3 inflammatory foods and their Lyme disease improves. Now, not most of them don't have just Lyme disease. They often have 3 or 4 other co-infections.
I see.
So, you know, these are people who are pretty sick. And
yeah.
So I'm using more of what I've learned on the human side and applying it to my patients, that it all starts with the food.
Let's go to Fred in Hurley. Fred, you're on.
Hey, Karen Ray and Dr. Chris.
Hi, Fred.
I have 3 mini schnauzers and 3 of a brood of 6. And my female is not fixed. And they're about 5 years old at this point.
Mm-hmm.
like wheezing a little bit when she's resting.
Okay.
And it only started like 2 days ago, a day and a half ago. And I'm wondering about colds in dogs or respiratory things that I should be looking out for.
Yeah, I mean, is she acting like herself, or is she acting depressed and off her food?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Yeah,
please.
is she acting depressed, or is she acting like herself?
She's acting herself. Yeah, she's a wild child. She can run in the woods and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. So when dogs become acutely off, let's say, with this wheezing, I'm a wait and see kind of person. As long as everything else is in order, if their energy levels are normal, if she's not depressed, if she's eating, I do the same thing with my kids. I don't rush to the doctor's office because they're sick. Kids are a lot like dogs because you can't always understand what's going on with them.
That's a good point.
When they're, pediatrics is very similar to veterinary medicine. So so I like to, take a wait and see approach. And I would say, if it doesn't go away in the amount of time you would expect a virus to be gone, which would be, 7 to 10 days, or if she's getting worse while it's progressing, then I would take her in.
Okay, Fred, hey, thanks a lot for the call. I got to tell you something, Doc.
Yeah.
We've had more Freds on this program, and this is Fred and Weidenskill. Fred, you're on.
Hi, this has to do with environmental stuff. Three things I was curious about.
Okay.
One is salt in the garage that gets brought in from the car.
Mm.
The second one is if you have a lot of insulation, fiberglass, that the cats can't get in, but it could possibly drop to the floor. And then the third one is I give these cats pipe cleaners, colored pipe cleaners from craft shops.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of curious if the dyes or the metal, if you've seen any problems with these types of things.
You know, it's funny. I haven't seen any problems with pipe cleaners. That sounds like a really fun toy for a cat. I guess I'd want to...
Oh, they love them.
Yeah, I guess I'd want to keep an eye on them, make sure they're not chewing them and eating them, But if they're just batting them around, I don't see why that would be any worse than the dyes that are in cat toys or what have you.
Yeah.
With insulation and salt, insulation, I feel like you probably just need to make sure that's contained. That probably doesn't sound good for you either. And then the salt that we use for, I'm pretty careful about that. Trying to not get it into the house. Mostly for dogs, it's a concern when they're out walking the streets and it gets on their feet. It can really be quite irritating to the pads of their feet.
I know it gets on their feet, and then they're constantly cleaning themselves.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if ingesting all that stuff.
Yeah, that didn't sound too good to me. Yeah, that doesn't excite me either. I tend to play
safe.
Just
reduce exposure to those.
Yeah, I would. I sort of take the precautionary approach with almost every toxin in our environment.
Makes sense. All right. Yeah. Now listen, there's about a minute or two here left. Let's go to someone not named Fred.
Okay.
Will in Albany. Will, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Hi.
I have an 11-year-old cockapoo, and she's been wetting her bed, which is my bed,
mm-hmm.
Quite a bit at night. Took her into the vet, I'd say 9 months or so ago, mm-hmm. and she had like a low-grade infection.
Mm-hmm.
We knocked it, two antibiotic treatments, didn't really knock it out, but she's still active, eats, drinks. I've heard that there's a nice pill out there, but we haven't gone there, and I'd like your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so, you definitely need to keep track of those infections, especially if they didn't quite clear up, because she could have a stone or some other, cause for a chronic infection, because that certainly can cause incontinence. But also, the drug you're talking about is Proin. I do know a lot of patients who take it. I have had some success with acupuncture and herbs for that. Actually, remarkable success, and as have chiropractors, interestingly. So it depends on the underlying cause, but that's usually the number one question is, I go to Proin when all other things have been ruled out.
All right, Will, that'll have to do it for you. And Dr. Chris Dallas, how do we find out more about Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services?
Well, I've got a phone number, 727-2940. That's in the 518 area code.
Okay.
And I also have a website that's actually in transition. It's called Veterinary Ancient Arts, and it's moving to a new format soon. But it's a little outdated, but about to go live soon.
So cool to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Well done, and we'll have you back again soon. Support comes from Paws for a Cause, a family business offering a range of dog products, all made in the USA. All profits donated to shelters, including Dachshund Humane Society. Additional information at pawsforacause.com. Mango Tree Imports, a global fair trade shop in downtown Saratoga Springs, New York, featuring artisans' goods from more than 60 countries. MangoTreeImports.com at Facebook. Penny Farthing Investment Management Amherst, a socially conscious fee-only investment advisor of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org. And Dance Flurry, announcing Family Dance this Sunday at 3 p.m. at First Congregational Church in Albany, featuring participatory dance and singing with live fiddle music for young children and parents. DanceFlurry.org for information. All right, thanks again to Dr. Chris Dallas for being here. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks for the great calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Carol Lapani answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, the script here says it's astronomy with Bob Berman. I don't know how you'll be able to sleep tonight. The news is next.